Hi there. Welcome to On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G, and this is a podcast about work. Each episode, I talk with someone about how they do work, how they feel about it, and how it relates to the rest of their life. Today, I'm talking with Katie McGee. Katie is an artist, designer, community builder, and one seriously competent person. Katie McGee, welcome to On Work.
Thanks, Joel. Really nice to be here.
Yay, I'm so happy to have you. So one thing that I think about is like how our childhood creates like the person we are today, or maybe even like how we address work or relate to work. And like personally, like as a child for me, like I did not enjoy childhood. Like it wasn't like a good time. Do you know what I mean? Like I didn't engage with it like in a positive way. I don't look back on it fondly. And I wonder if that relates to like my poor interaction with work as an adult maybe. And I'm wondering if you can share a little bit about like your childhood and like what it was like growing up for you.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that I grew up in Tucson, Arizona in the desert. We spent a lot of time weirdly outside, despite how incredibly hot it was. It never seemed to bother us. I did a lot of playing in nature. I spent a lot of time in nature and a lot of time playing with friends, doing make-believe things. A lot of my make-believe was about school. I loved to be in an office, or I loved to be in school. And I don't really know why, but I would go with my Cabbage Patch Kids and we would set them up as though they were in an office and we would play office.
Okay.
And I
okay.
think that has an interesting reflection on where I find myself today, which is that I kind of love work. I've always loved teaching people things and being involved in, I don't know how to describe it. I feel very much like my childhood of exploration and make-believe around work is somehow tied to this commitment that I have to what I do now.
Do you think that your parents like encouraged that or helped you like, or in some way encouraged you or influenced you in those games?
I think that maybe it was, you know, I saw my parents both worked really hard. My dad is a landscape architect and designer and has worked outside. He still works outside at least 4 or 5 days a week. He's 79. And that work was backbreaking, hard work. And he worked hard for the money he earned. And my mom worked two or three jobs at any given time doing all kinds of different things. And eventually she became a teacher and that was her full-time job. But just worked incredibly hard at being an educator. And so there was that, like that deep work ethic was a very big part of how I grew up. Like understanding how hard people have to work to make money. And that money is a privilege to be able to, it should be a right, but it takes a lot for us to earn money. And not everybody earns as much money as some people who do a lot less work to earn that money. And so my relationship to work ethic, I think, was really grounded in the kind of modeling that my parents did. And not always healthy, you know? I mean, I wouldn't say that my mom's relationship to work was necessarily healthy, but it definitely instilled in me a value of doing a good job, showing up in a really authentic way, and always doing your best.
You think that you picked that up from observation of them, like that became a part of you because of what you observed in them?
I think to some extent, yes. I think that certainly there was that modeling made a difference and impacted me. But I also think that there is just something intrinsic in me that has a drive to succeed and to achieve that I've always had since I was a small kid. And neither of my parents can really have ever really put that kind of pressure on me. But I lived as a kid and up until I would say in my 20s, of just putting a tremendous amount of pressure on myself to achieve and to have a really unhealthy relationship to that achievement, that desire to achieve.
So there's a couple things there. One is like unhealthy is interesting, but also like, you know, like I would say as a kid, I had a drive to achieve and be successful, but I didn't do any work. You know, I never did, like I was good at math, but I never did any math homework. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm pretty sure like I wanted to be like a physicist and I liked math and science, but like did zero homework, you know? And so that at some point related to me like not achieving, but like you had this drive to success, to succeed and achieve, but you also had like the work ethic to like realize that both of those things were necessary to achieve.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that my I was really good at school. I was a very good student, and I think a lot of my drive to achieve was probably rooted in wanting my parents to, particularly my dad, to see me as an intellectual, as an achiever, as a smart person. That was how he responded to people in the world, that if you were really smart and you were doing good work and
Yeah.
achieving, then you got that attention and love. And so, not to go too deep into my psychology, but I
Yeah,
think that
yeah,
that
yeah.
had a big influence on me for sure. And then I had, my dad being very intellectual, and we do the crossword puzzles together since I was very little, those kinds of things. But my mom was a very creative person. She went to art school. She didn't get to continue at art school for lots of reasons, and she didn't become an artist for many reasons. But that creative spirit was always really deep with her, and she helped, my brother and I find that part of us and explore that part of us. And when she became an educator, her focus was really on art education, particularly for kindergartners and first graders. And she ran an art summer camp for many years, and they, taught the kids about all kinds of different models of art and art history. And so I feel like that I was very focused from a very young age on that achievement intellectual side, and it took me a long time to embrace and acknowledge my creative side and to actually see myself as a creative person, because I had been so focused on this achievement, being good at school. Like, that was how I was getting validation. That I have felt a lot less confidence in the creativity, and so it took me a long time to get there.
It sort of sounds like you're half and half your parents. You're half your dad and half your mom in some funny way.
I think so.
And do you have siblings?
I do. I have a younger brother. He lives in San Diego, and
I was just wondering if you think he's similar like to you in his relationship to work. Not like too deeply. I don't want to like know too much about him, but I was wondering if
no,
siblings, I feel like siblings come
we're
out different sometimes.
totally different. We're totally different. Like, I think he embraces creativity much earlier on and has spent most of his life really being creative. And he decided to go into the field of bartending and bar management. And he is a cocktail creator, and he's been working in the same restaurant for a really long time. And he does things like illustrate every cocktail that he and his team have ever made in these little notebooks. And he plays a lot of disc golf, and he has a much more relaxed relationship to work.
Can you tell a little bit like maybe one of your first jobs? Like, I don't know, did you have a job in high school?
No, yeah. So my first job was working at an Italian restaurant in Tucson, Arizona called Vince's. And Vince was an Italian guy that my mom knew because she taught his kids. And I was slightly underage. Like, I mean, it says a lot about me. Like, I started working as soon as I possibly could. So I think I was like 15 and a half, and maybe you needed to be 16. I don't remember. But I was a bus girl at the Italian restaurant, and it was a very sort of like mom and pop goofy Italian place with red and white checkered tablecloths and Chianti bottles on the table, and it had a total of 10 Italian songs that played over and over and over and over. And I loved it, and it was the most fun. And I did a lot of work in restaurants for a long time.
When I was a kid, I never wanted to go to work. Like it never like I you know, like it would come up like maybe you should go get a job and I'd be like, "Oh, no." You know, like but like what made you like as a 15 and a half year old think that like you wanted to like go to work?
I mean, I think there were a lot of things going on. I wanted to be out of my house real bad. Like, things weren't the best at my house when I was, especially as my teenage years came on. So that was part of it. I wanted cash. I was soon to be getting a car because I was going to turn 16, and I needed cash. And I understood that we didn't, as a family, we didn't have a lot of disposable income. And if I wanted to do stuff and be independent, then I was going to need my own income. And then I think that also that like work ethic, like seeing my parents working and wanting to have that experience and understanding the value of that was important. But more than anything, it was like I was just like raring to go with my independence. I just needed to get out of my house.
And when you went to college, did you go to college?
I did, yeah.
You did. And when you went to college, did you know what you wanted? And is that what you do now?
When I went to college, I thought I knew what I wanted, and it is not what I do now. When I went to college, for some reason, I got very attached to the idea of going to Boston College. I think I had maybe a friend who was a year ahead of me who went there, and I got really enamored with going to the East Coast and kind of laser focused on getting there. And I did, which was incredible. And it was a wild and weird experience. When I went to college, I thought that I wanted to be a doctor. I immediately went into pre-med and was a psychology major. And most of that was really driven by being good at school. I was really good at science. I was really good at math. I could see myself achieving. And I was really interested in medicine and helping people. And I would say that part of me, that desire to help people and improve their lives, has always been part of what I've done. But the medicine piece was not something that I ended up pursuing for lots of different reasons. It
Yeah,
took me on quite an
okay.
adventure.
Okay. Your title now is design manager. And how would you
It is.
describe that to a 5-year-old, as it were? I
I
guess I'm
yeah.
interested in like how a design manager achieves the goals of the organization, frankly. Like what is your part in
Oh yeah.
achieving the goals of the organization?
So I run a team of about 10 designers, product designers, and content designers. I work at a software company. And so what that means is my designers are thinking about who are the people that we are trying to solve problems for. What are the problems that they have and the jobs that they need to do with the software that we create? And how do we design experiences for them in our apps that help them get their jobs done? And so my role is to help my design team understand what the strategy and priorities of the business are, and to each of them is responsible for different parts of the apps that we build, and they design the end-to-end experience for our customers. So we are responsible for creating what things look like, how they feel, what the words are, how it all fits together, and we help the business deliver those experiences to customers.
Did you do the jobs before that you manage now?
No. I have never been a designer. I was not trained as a designer, so my pathway to this role has been unique.
Yeah, I wouldn't think you would get the job, or I wouldn't give you the job
No, nobody, no. I
if
didn't
you
think I
hadn't
was
done
going to get the job. No.
it.
And a lot of my experience at my current job has been proving to myself that I can do this job, that I am good at this job. And that I have been good at it for a really long time for lots of reasons that have nothing to do with the fact that I wasn't a designer from jump.
You would have to have confidence, or you'd have to feel, a certain sense of confidence about yourself to be able to do this.
Yes, and that has been a long road of building that confidence over, I would say, I mean, I started in this field in 2013. Was hired by a friend at a health technology company. He was looking for someone who understood designers, project management, and healthcare. And I kind of fit that bill
Oh,
and
right.
jumped into this role in a startup. And that accelerated, that created this pathway for me to a new career. And I would say that the leap from that company, I was there for 9 years, to this new company was probably the biggest leap that I've made in my professional life from a confidence building perspective. It's been a very hard road.
I don't associate, I my job title is instructional designer, but I don't like say, hey, I'm an instructional designer. It's like not who I am. And I was wondering, do you relate to it, like as a part of your personality, perhaps, or who you are?
Well, I think that the deepest part of it for me, my in who I am, is about supporting people and helping develop people in their confidence and their creativity and their capabilities, and helping people come together to create something that is much larger than what they could do on their own. At the heart of it, that's really what I do as a design manager. And that is who I am as a person, and it has been for a long time.
It aligns, they align, I think,
Yeah,
is
yeah.
what we would say.
So I
Okay.
don't necessarily identify with the, the sort of nuts and bolts or ins and outs of design management per se. But it, yeah, it's
Yeah.
really about the people for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, Katie, I think we're going to take a quick break here,
Okay.
and we'll be right back after this message from our sponsor. Looking for a reason to smash your phone into the wall? Want to find out the latest and worst of humanity? Need something to fill every moment with so that you don't have to sit with yourself? How about your newsfeed? Your newsfeed is individually designed for you and your family. Your newsfeed is guaranteed to bring you right down to rock bottom, whether you're a conservative, liberal, flat earther, progressive, and is even effective for independents. Your newsfeed guaranteed to match your worst worldview biases since 1996. Side effects reported by 100% of users include elevated heart rate, tightness in the chest, looseness in the bowels, increased anxiety, decreased hopefulness in humanity, twitchy eye, muscle spasms, depression, back pain, achy joints, acne, and diarrhea. We're back. If you've totally spaced out and forgotten what you're listening to, this is On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G, and my guest today is Katie McGee, independent thinker and artist and community builder. Thank you again for being here, Katie.
Yeah, absolutely. This is super fun.
Hey, what is your relationship with caffeine?
It's pretty minimal, actually. I have a cup of
Oh,
coffee a day,
yeah.
and sometimes I don't finish it.
Oh.
It kind of depends on what I'm doing, and if I'm feeling like if I'm out and on the weekends, I'll have a latte, something special. But when I go to Sydney, which I do often, because my company is based there. There is a really big coffee culture there. So I spend a lot of time drinking coffee in Sydney. It's really good coffee and it's plentiful. Yeah.
I didn't know. One of my favorite traveling things is to drink coffee where I go.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
that's awesome. When you were young and you spent all that time outdoors, like, did you guys go camping? Were you fishing? Were you hunting? Like, what was the, like, what would you do outdoors?
We did a lot of camping.
Yeah.
We would go up to the mountains in Arizona, not that far away, a couple 3 hours to Pine Top, and we'd camp. We did a lot of fishing. My mom grew
Yeah,
up
okay.
fishing her most of her life. My mom's family is they were ranchers, cattle ranchers. So she grew up outside all the time, and like fishing was a big deal. So we did a lot of fishing. We would catch trout. My mom would clean the fish and we'd eat the fish. And fair amount of hiking and just yeah, like and I didn't really appreciate the kind of nature that I got to grow up in until much later.
Well, you don't. You
Which,
wouldn't.
yeah.
Yeah.
But now like the desert is such a I crave it. And I mean, yeah, I want to be there a lot.
And do you have an artistic expression or a way you express yourself creatively, personally?
I do a couple of things. I mean, recently it's been a lot of fun, silly graphic design projects. So,
Okay.
if a friend has a big birthday or
Yeah.
I've done signage for people's weddings, that kind of thing. And so I make
Okay.
logos for people and that's been a super fun outlet.
Yeah.
But I mean, I guess the longest running thing that I've done is with the nonprofit that I'm a part of called the Flux Foundation, which grew out of building the temple at Burning Man in 2010. And we've been building large scale art since then together or supporting other people to build large scale art. My days of building big projects are kind of over, but I do get involved with other people who are driving big projects. So last year I worked on a great project called Naga and the Captainess with three women artists that are really good friends of mine. And that has just been installed in Golden Gate Park, which is very exciting. But I like to stay involved in learning new skills in building sculpture. So I worked on that project because I wanted to really learn woodworking. I wanted to not be afraid of the tools and understand how to frame and like do very basic things. But that I try to find something each year that I can do to build those skills.
You mentioned earlier like your unhealthy work ethic perhaps, or your unhealthy relationship to like work potentially in some way, but to me it sounds like it's really brought you a lot, you know, like in the workplace and artistically, like your drive to get things done has really brought you some really amazing things.
Yeah, I absolutely think that's true. I feel like I've gotten, you know, if I think about the big art career, I mean, we were doing crazy things because we were working sometimes 24 hours a day just trying to get stuff ready for Burning Man. But that experience of working together at such an intensity in a high pressure environment, getting something done, feeling like everybody has a part in it, everybody has a feeling of ownership. And getting to the end and then seeing what you've done and seeing other people experiencing it. It's the same for the big artwork as it is for my job today. Like, I mean, we're in the middle of a very similar process right now where we're all working super hard on the weekends trying to build something for a big conference. And when we get to the end, we will see all of that work up on stage in an audience of, you know, tens of thousands of people. Watching live and online, and that feeling of like we did that together, like it's very powerful. And so, yes, the unhealthiness has
Yeah.
brought quite a bit of benefit, I think.
You like being on a team. You get like being on a team is super important to you.
It's really important. It always has been. Yeah.
I've had some experiences like in my previous job, I was an audio video installer, which didn't really match me. Like working with tools and like putting my, I would say like putting a hole in a conference table is like terrifying for me, you know, because I can't fix problems. I can't fix that problem I make. Like if I put a hole in something and it's not right, like I was like, oh. So, but there was like a team of us, you know, and I like really like, I wasn't there for very long, but like, you know, near the end of it, I was on a team of like five people or four, whatever it was. And like, I just trusted everybody. Like everybody had their part in the team and I knew my part and their part, whatever. And it just felt really good. And then sometimes in my next job is like working in audio video. We do events, you know, and like there is a thing about like putting on an event together where it's maybe stressful in the front, but then when you come out of it, sometimes you're like, oh, we all did that together. And like
Yeah.
I couldn't have done it without them, whether like I like their work ethic or not. Do you know what I mean? Even that part of even
Yeah.
that difficult part like still feels pretty good when you come out, like because you still couldn't have done it without them.
Yeah. Do you have a
Yeah.
team now that you work with?
Oh man, that Katie, see, that's a good question. I would say basically no. I think my work would say I am on a team. But I have some issues with like wanting to like not be told how to do things and like not getting input. One issue I have is getting input from people I don't respect in their work outlook or their outlook about how things should be done doesn't match mine. Not personally about my respect for them, but like I
Yeah.
don't necessarily. I don't like to be the smartest person on the team. Frankly, is a bit of a problem for me. And I'm not saying that I am, but like, so basically I just work alone and I don't really ask for input. And sometimes I'm like, you know, it's suggested that I do, or like in my annual PDP, you know, work with your coworkers more. And so I kind of try to, but I don't really want to. But I would be happier, which is this weird conflict with me. I would be
Yeah.
happier working on a team. Eh, so
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
it's
Yeah, the
complicated.
dynamics and the chemistry and the like
Yeah,
all of that
yeah.
stuff matters. Like, yeah, I mean, I've definitely rolled through all kinds of different teams in my
Yeah.
life and it, yeah, it really matters that chemistry
How do you
and
manage like
trust.
working with teammates that you don't trust or that you know like you don't like aren't perfect for you? You know what I mean? Like not all like teammates by a workplace team by default is not going to be of your choosing, I would
Yeah.
suggest. And so there's
Yeah.
always going to be like somebody who's kind of a problem and I get kind of wrapped up in that problem and it causes me, you know, to like not be happy. And I was wondering as maybe as a manager even like how do you
Yeah, it's tricky. You know, it depends on the power dynamic with the person. So if it's someone who is above me or, you know, that I need to have a relationship with that person because that person is determining my fate or determining how my team is run. That's different than it's a dynamic between me and someone who reports to me. But I think in general, I really try to understand what motivates people. Like, how is someone motivated? And I've learned a lot about how I'm motivated and how I am not motivated. I am not motivated, for instance, by money. I've learned that about myself. But other people are very motivated by money, whether that's money for themselves or money for the company. And so, like, that's an example of, like, I want to understand how someone, what is driving someone, so that I can start to think about, okay, so if that person is motivated in this particular way, how do I shift how I talk to them or what I talk to them about to align better with their worldview so that we can better move through the problem that we're trying to solve? Like, I'm not necessarily trying to change myself to have that particular value, but by understanding what their value is, I can start to communicate with them in a more effective way. And then ideally we can start to move towards a solution. Because when I don't take the time to understand and I just want to bang my head against the wall because this person doesn't see the world the way that I do, we don't get very far. And so I've been trying to learn how to understand people's motivations better to help me in these dynamics. It's not always easy.
Yeah. I've been thinking that lately I should do more inquiry or listening, you know, like really try and like listen to people and like ask them like how they, it's kind of like a little game I play. Like if I run into like a neighbor on the street, you know, and they're talking to me about whatever it is, you know, I try and like, they say something interesting. I try to figure out what the interesting thing is that they said and ask them like, how did you end up there? Why do you, you know,
yeah.
I've been trying to do that lately, but for whatever reason, I don't bring it to work very much, you know, like, cause I have some fear potentially. I don't know what it is, but
yeah.
Is this, do you get that way through conversations with your employees directly? Or do you like spend time, you know, I'm going to take 15 minutes or an hour to think about this employee and what their motivations are, or is, how would you come to that?
I do think about it, and I have been using AI tools lately as a way to have these kinds of conversations to kind of work out what I'm seeing and feeling and summarize and like distill out what I think is going on with the person or how I might communicate with that person. I find it to be probably the most common way that I use AI, ChatGPT or Claude right now, is like talking out loud. So I've had a couple of really challenging situations with people who report to me, and they're very complex and they are very emotionally charged often. And there's a lot of different factors. And I find it very hard to sit down and write about something and make sense of the problem on my own. And it's often not always possible for me to talk to somebody else at work because some of these problems are pretty private, and I need time to think them through before I communicate to someone else. And so this like anonymous tool that allows me to talk and just like stream of consciousness discuss what's going on helps me to make sense of what I need to do next and how I should talk to this person. And it comes up with all kinds of tactics and strategies that I wouldn't normally know how to do on my own.
I think that's an interesting use of AI. I have not heard of that before. And how did you realize that what AI could be used for that?
Well, I'm not sure how I realized it, but I have read recently that this is one of the top use cases for AI right now.
Yeah,
and it's sort of like interpersonal problem solving. Like, you know, it goes to the extreme of, you know, using AI as a therapist. But I think that there's any number of like, I've got this problem with this friend and I don't really know how to address it. Like, here's the situation. How would you approach this? But I think that I discovered it mostly because I started using it when I was thinking about really big problems at work, and they were all a jumble in my head. And so there was a moment where I had to go down to Mountain View. I was in the car for a really long time, And I was like, I can't figure out how to approach this problem. And so I just started using the voice mode and ChatGPT in the car. And by the time I got to the office, I could then have a summary of all of the things I talked about, the problem that I needed to solve. Here are some ideas for solutions. Here's how I'm going to frame it. And it really helped me, one, accelerate like how fast I can get the work done, but it just helped me like make sense of stuff in my brain. And so I started using it for more like personal, interpersonal conversations.
I like that voice mode. I haven't used voice mode because mostly I'm typing and mostly I'm in the office, I guess, most of the time. But voice mode does seem sort of like it opens up a new world of just like you're actually having the conversation and you don't have to go from your brain to your fingers and then like take the effort. And it seems like that might be better.
Yeah, it's interesting. I do it on walks, sometimes in the car. It just like helps me clear my brain of stuff that's going on.
I think it's an amazing tool, and frankly, I can't do my job without it. And I wasn't doing my job before it existed. And I was like, "Oh, thank goodness this showed up just in time." So how about that? But I also think it's gonna like, I think it's a net negative, frankly. I think it's a net negative on the planet and humanity. And I wish it didn't exist. And what do you think?
I feel you, and I am, I think I'm on the fence. I don't believe it's a net negative. However, I do believe that there are so many dangers, and we continually see the impact on the environment, the dangers that it poses to human beings in their relationship to themselves, to each other, developing this kind of tight relationship with a model is very dangerous. In my job, I have to take all of my existential fears and my moral quandaries and my worries and kind of set them aside because the expectation in my job is that I am learning about the tools, I am experimenting with them, I am helping my team to learn and experiment because as designers, our future depends on it. And as a company, our future depends on it. And so it's an interesting tension for me. And I think what that's done is it's allowed me to set aside all of that fear and worry and really approach it with curiosity and like a learning mindset and see the possibility in it. And we've been doing some really cool stuff at work, and it's been really exciting to see a bunch of people again come together to tackle this really crazy problem. And think about a future state that we can't quite see, but that we can sort of predict based on what we see out in the market and develop some really great, cool interactions using AI prototyping and using AI tools to kind of get us there. That has helped me to see the positivity and the possibility. And then the other thing that I do regularly is I listen, one of my favorite podcasts is Hard Fork. It's a New York Times podcast, it's a tech podcast. And they spend a lot of time like just trying to help you understand what's going on in the world of AI. And their approach, their critical thinking about the tools and the industry and just like education has really helped me to understand its place and to think critically about what's going on and like understand the landscape better.
Awesome. Thank you, Katie. I have a closing question.
Okay.
Is there something new in your life, a habit, an idea, or an insight that's making things better for you? Something you've tried or something you've become aware of recently that's improved your life physically, mentally, spiritually, socially, creatively?
Well, one thing that I have tried to adopt more, and this is a little bit of silly pop psychology, but there's a book called The Let Them Theory, it's writer Mel Robbins, and it's not necessarily new information, but the way that she frames it is very palatable. And the Let Them Theory is that instead of getting wrapped up in how people are reacting, wanting to control a situation, wanting people to do a certain thing, wanting people to not be super loud in a coffee shop, or wanting people to not chew so loud on an airplane, you just let them do what they're doing and you try to center yourself in your own self and in what you're capable of. And I think what's for me, it's I think been interesting to have a con I have a conversation with my mom very often. I've turned her on to all kinds of different books and ideas about how do you not worry so much about what other people think and really just take care of yourself, which is something she's always struggled with. And so it's kind of become for my mom and I this conversation where she talks to me about how it's working for her. How is this letting them experience working for her in her life? And then how is it working for me? And it's kind of opened up new channels of communication for us. And I'm seeing my mom at, 75 start to understand the world in a totally new way where she's like, oh, I don't have to worry so much about what that person is doing or thinking. I can just be me and do my own thing. So
That's
that,
awesome.
yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I'm so thankful to
Yeah.
have heard that. That's awesome. Well, thank you for being here, Katie. I really appreciate it.
This was super fun, Joel. Thanks for having me. And I think this podcast you've got here is pretty great.
Thank you. Well, that's it for today's conversation. Thanks again to Katie for being here, and thank you so much for listening. This has been On Work with Joel G. I'm Joel G. Music credit, Life is Good by Beat Mechanic from the Free Music Archive, used under Creative Commons license. Additional emotional support from things like indoor plumbing, down comforters, and coffee. That's all for this episode. Be present, keep going, look up, and take care.